Hello, everybody, and welcome to the War Room. This one is for the UFC 288 main event for the bantamweight title. The defending champion, Aljamain Sterling, taking on the former champion, flyweight and bantamweight champion, and Olympic gold medalist, Henry Cejudo. I'm excited for this fight. I think it's going to be absolute fireworks. I feel like Cejudo, even though, of course, he was the flyweight champion, I feel like this is the better weight class for him. He always had battles against the scales when he was a flyweight. We could see that before he came to the UFC. He made his UFC debut at bantamweight. You know, this is just a stronger weight class for him. I feel like he does battle against the scales to get down to flyweight. And of course, Aljamain Sterling, there's no way he's going any lower than this weight class. But there is a height and reach advantage for Sterling, which I think may certainly play into this. Before we go any further, this show is brought to you by our friends at Raid Shadow Legends. I love this game. You know it. I'm playing it all the time. So these are my champions right now. I've got a couple of new ones I'm going to show you recently. They're very, very cool. Of course, Genbo is one of my favourites. Ronda's still doing really well. But the new Stag Knight is absolutely awesome, especially with me being from Nottingham. I kind of feel like he's the Nottingham Knight. And then I've got a couple of new legendary champions recently, Yorick Wimbane and Robar. A fantastic game. You'll very much enjoy playing it. You need to download it and get it on your phone. And this April, we're going on an egg hunt. Just download Raid Shadow Legends using the link below, copy your in-game player ID, and then head over to egghunt.plarium.com between now and May 15th. Enter your player ID and journey through the flaming portal to embark on an exciting AR adventure. Scour the dragon's lair using your phone, and if you find the hidden egg, you'll be in for a chance to win amazing in-game items and even real-life prizes, ranging from legendary raid champions to Amazon gift cards with a total value of $20,000. If you haven't downloaded the game yet, get it. There are over 700 champions to collect now. I've got a whole handful of them, and I keep training them up. I keep improving them, giving them different artifacts and upgrading them. There's loads of different things, different ways you can play this game. Make sure you get involved. New players, if you use my link or scan the QR code on the screen, you'll be able to get a free in-game starter pack with loads and loads of cool loot that'll get you going with your raid journey. You'll love this game. I'm addicted to it. I play it every day, and I think you'll love it too. All right, tale of the tape. So the defending champion, Aljamain Sterling, coming in with a record of 22 wins and 3 losses. Henry Cejudo, the challenger in this fight, with a record of 16 wins and 2 losses. Height and reach advantage for Aljamain Sterling, of course, 3 inches in height and, what is that, 7 inches in reach. That's a decent height and reach advantage. And something that I feel like will be one of the main factors if Aljamain Sterling's able to win this fight. It's going to be utilizing his reach and his unorthodox striking and his kind of flowing, like, kind of chaotic style that he has. Like, there are different ways that Aljo can exploit the game of Henry Cejudo, but skill for skill, he's going to struggle everywhere, because Cejudo's striking, of course, you know, Aljo's got decent striking, but he's not necessarily a knockout artist. His striking can be it's quite unpredictable. He tends to lean forward and kind of pop you with different swiping shots that have not got a great deal of force behind them. He tends to kind of sweep and throw high kicks from you know, with weird movement as well. He's very difficult to predict. The times when he's catching people is often when, you know, they're chasing him down after he's kicked and missed a shot or something, and he throws a spinning back fist or spinning elbow or something. There are moments in his game that can be very difficult for Cejudo to deal with, but what I expect from Cejudo, especially when we've seen him change his style, because of course in the early time of the UFC he was much more kind of square, ready to be in a wrestling stance, whereas after those couple of losses that he picked up, we started to see him much more side on. You know, the commentators talked about it all the time, this kind of karate style that he's got, you know, Machida-esque, Wonder Boy style, where he's much more in and out, better at managing the range. Of course, that doesn't make up for the height and reach advantage that Aljamain Sterling's got. And then if you look at the fights that Sterling's had over shorter opponents, the likes of Jimmy Rivera or Pedro Munhoz, he's managed to kind of hold them in this space where he can hit them and they can't hit him. Like, he can pepper them and pokes at them, but then when they swing back, he's just out of range. And if he feels like they're getting too close, then of course he starts to level change. Now, this is another area where I feel like he's going to struggle against Cejudo, because skill set for skill set, Henry Cejudo in a kickboxing match against Sterling, I feel like Henry Cejudo's got better striking. In a wrestling match, I don't really think there's any argument that Cejudo would win that. Jiu-jitsu is a different thing. But the question is, can Cejudo use his wrestling to keep out of the way of the submissions of Aljamain Sterling? Because of all the three ranges, if we cut mixed martial arts down to the striking, the wrestling, and the grappling range, it's the grappling range where Sterling has his main advantages. Taking the back, working the Suluev stretch, the knee bar that he got Cody Stamann with, or even if he slides off, he works really nice triangles from that position as well. There's a chain of submissions there that are going to be quite useful for Aljamain Sterling that don't require him actually taking Cejudo down before he starts that chain of submissions. He can level change and grab hold of a leg, but as Cejudo's defending it, Sterling might be able to get onto his back and then climb up onto his back. So the process of taking Cejudo down is not actually necessary to start the grappling exchange. If Sterling's able to get to Cejudo's back, then he's going to be able to climb up and take it, and then Cejudo's dealing with back defense. Now, whether he decides to go to the floor to deal with that, whether he decides to bend forward at the waist and try and shake Aljamain Sterling off, these are all different questions that Cejudo might have to answer if Sterling gets to that position. But if Sterling does get there, we're looking at body triangle to hold the position, or he'll open up and he'll go regular hooks, which means that Cejudo is most likely going to try and lean forward and shake him off, and then we'll start looking for him reaching for those ankles like he did against Cody Stamann. The submission game of Aljo is really the most problematic part, as I said, but Cejudo's always shown good sub defense. He's never been subbed. He's been stopped and he's lost a decision. He's never been subbed. And in the times when we've seen him on the ground, especially in his earlier fights when he was up against people that were far more interested in trying to sub him off their back. I think his first opponent was Kimura. Dustin Kimura. I mean, you'd just be a Kimura expert if that was your name. That was his UFC debut. And I remember in that fight seeing really strong and intelligent submission defense, good posture, defending triangles, passing and smashing. And something else that we see from Cejudo, which, interestingly, when we talk about high-level wrestlers, of course, Cejudo being one of them, Daniel Cormier also does this as well. Now, Cormier doesn't mind chaos in the takedown. Like, you think about the takedowns on, was it Dan Henderson and Gustafsson, where he picked Henderson up and basically threw him through the air. He did the same thing with Gustafsson, lifted him up, turned him upside down in the air. But then as soon as he lands, he clamps onto people. And we see the same thing from Sterling as we do from Cejudo, but Cejudo is much more about score the takedown and clamp and settle. Score the takedown, clamp and settle. That's the point when he starts to clamp. What we see from Sterling and what we saw in the Petr Yan fight, the second one in particular, when he was it the third round where he was on his back the whole time? As he was going for the takedown and Yan's trying to get away from him, Sterling was able to clamp onto him with his legs. It's a very similar kind of thing, but from a much more of a jiu-jitsu perspective, clamping into positions, locking into position with his legs and holding onto a person as they're going to be trying to scramble to get out. Like, that's something that we see quite consistently with these lighter weight classes. You know, I was thinking about it, yesterday as I was watching through fights. Like, Demetrius Johnson is a really good example. Same as Jose Aldo, even as a featherweight. They just don't accept being taken down. Like, as soon as they go even near the floor, they're bumping to get back up. You remember the same thing that we saw from Aldo when he fought Mendez the second time. Bump, back to his feet. I mean, watch DJ against Cejudo. Like, his takedown offense is rapid. His footwork is excellent. And that's partly down to the weight class. Like, you wouldn't get heavyweights or maybe even light heavyweights scrambling like that. It takes a lot more effort and there's a lot more of them to move. And ultimately, a lot more of their opponent to deal with as well. These lighter weight classes, that when you score a takedown or when the fight hits the floor, they have to be so much more focused on control immediately, because they're expecting a wild scramble from someone that's less than 150 pounds that can move like a greyhound chasing the rabbit. Like, a lot of these fighters are so difficult to hold down just purely because of the speed that they move at. So When Cejudo takes people down, he's very good at clearing the legs and clamping down onto them, settling them down in a position where he can make sure that he's not going to lose that takedown investment in a wild scramble. See, one thing that that DJ did really well was continuously like Granby rolling out of stuff. And that, you know, that might be something that we see Aljo doing in this fight. But I ultimately feel like Cejudo's gonna want to keep this one in the striking range. Like Aljo's striking is there's no real pattern to it, which is what makes it difficult to deal with. And because he's got a longer reach than Cejudo, just as he did with Pedro Munhoz and with Jimmy Rivera, what we see is him keeping people right on the ends of his arms. You're like pop, 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 and then sometimes he'll step in with an elbow. But it's very, very rare that he'll move through that range unless he's deciding to work a takedown. If I'm Cejudo, my brain's skipping through fighters here. If I'm looking at Aljo's striking from Cejudo's perspective, I'm going to employ some of the similar things that I did against Dominic Cruz. So Sterling's got good movement. He's very springy. He switches his stance a lot. He's difficult to predict in his movement, and he moves a lot, which means that it's very, very hard work to get close to him. What Cejudo did really well against Dominic Cruz was kicking his legs so hard that Cruz couldn't do anything about it other than think about defend. Now, often when you see a fighter throw a leg kick, they're throwing the kick, of course, to hit and hurt and do damage to their opponent. But also, they've got to worry about what's coming back. They've got to worry about whether their opponent's going to catch the leg, whether they're going to level change, try and take him down, whether they're going to trade it with a punch, whether they're going to try and chase it back to stance and throw a kick of their own. There are lots of things that you have to consider when you're throwing a low kick in a fight. But what you see with Cejudo against Cruz is that he was committing so hard to the kicks that he didn't give Cruz the options to trade it or defend it or move out the way of it most of the time. Like, he was hammering his legs really hard. And of course, you know, there is a risk to that, but if you're Cejudo, you know you've got takedown defense, you know you've got wrestling. So even if your opponent does level change, which most likely is what Aljo will do if he starts to get kicked in the legs, because that's what we've seen in previous fights. You know, if you start hacking at his lead leg, he's going to start falling into a takedown attempt. And I think that kind of plays into Cejudo's game, especially if he just wants to keep it standing. Kick his leg, stuff his head, get back to the feet. Kick his leg, stuff his head, get back to the feet. Quite a simple game plan for Cejudo to start beating Aljo straight away. Now, he's going to have to take a few risks stepping in, because for as good as Dominic Cruz's striking is, he doesn't commit to wild spinning back fists quite as much as Aljo does, and he's not as big of a fighter. So I'd imagine that the things that Aljo lands, because of his wildness and his commitment and the size difference, I would imagine that they're going to be more detrimental to Cejudo. But still, his speed in and out of range, his ability to level change and get under those spinning attacks, there's lots of different ways that Cejudo can nullify this. Now, let me just go through my notes here. I didn't even get into the tail of the tape, did I, aside from the height and reach. It's quite interesting, the tail of the tape, because so the strikes landed per minute is higher for Aljamain Sterling by, you know, not by a massive amount, but 4.7 compared to 3.9. Aljo throws a lot. He peppers his opponents a lot. He also takes less strikes per minute as well. He is difficult to predict because his hands are down and he's sweeping and moving his head all the time. And most of the time when people try and commit to a shot, he's quite happy to level change. But this is another thing that we have to look at when it comes to their wrestling, their takedowns. Because like Aljo, let me have a look. I think he attempted to take Jimmy Rivera down 8 times. He didn't get any of them. 7 times. 7 attempts, no success. Something similar with Pedro Munhoz as well. No takedowns, 7 attempted. Like that's a 0% takedown accuracy against 2 guys that are not as good wrestling as Henry Cejudo. But what we do see with Aljo's game is that he's able to initiate takedowns that even if he fails, he's able to draw people into grappling exchanges, as I was talking about earlier. You know, getting behind people and taking their back or initiating a takedown that they start to scramble out of and then chasing them down and attempting a second or third. the activity for Henry Cejudo with takedowns is slightly higher. So it's 2.1 compared to 1.9. There's not much in it. Cejudo, of course, is slightly ahead. But he has better takedown accuracy at 33% compared to 24%. And his takedown defense is 93% compared to 41% for Aljamain Sterling. So again, like, you look at everything. You look at how Aljo struggled with guys who aren't as good wrestlers as Cejudo. And you kind of think, well, he might have to accept that he can't get the takedown, but it doesn't mean that he won't be able to grapple at points in the fight. And when it comes to the ranged striking, of course, Aljo's got an advantage in the height and reach, but then does his decision making make him vulnerable to Cejudo, who, in my opinion, has got much cleaner striking? Let me go through my little notes here before, so I don't forget anything. So for Aljamain Sterling, it's about unorthodox striking, you know, sweeping his head low and coming up to head kicks and stuff. Like, these are things that we've heard his corner team call for, as well as we've seen him use in fights. That very unorthodox kind of low head dip where he brings his kick up quite high. Those kind of things are going to be the most likely strikes to get through to Henry Cejudo, especially if Cejudo is starting to play on that side stance karate game that we've seen him use. I also like the idea of Aljamain Sterling throwing some elbows in as well, because Cejudo, he's got a big old head, you know what I mean? And he doesn't move his head quite as much as Aljamain Sterling. So if Cejudo is attacking, you know he's moving in a straight line. He tends to punch himself over his legs, which means that he's traveling forward as he's punching and doesn't necessarily have the same kind of control. So any kind of smashing elbows down the center line for Aljo are going to be beneficial, because it will give him something to stop Cejudo's forward movement. The relentless wrestling from Aljo is going to be important, you know, initiating takedowns even if he's not going to get them, forcing Cejudo to turn and taking his back, and then that chain of submissions, the rear naked choke to the Suluev stretch, the knee bar attack to the triangle, all things that are going to be beneficial for Aljo to keep the fight moving on the floor. And I honestly think Cejudo is going to most likely want to keep this one on the feet, just so he can use his speed in and out of range. And I also think it's a better use of his energy as well. You know, wrestling with Aljo, you know, for as low as the stats are on Aljo's side compared to Cejudo's, 24% to 33% and 41% compared to 93%. You could quite easily get tired working with a bigger fighter that's got decent scrambles and is quite chaotic. And Aljo is one of those fighters, a little bit like Mershaw, in the way that it's sometimes hard to tell when he's tired, because his style's kind of all over the place anyway. With Cejudo, especially in his earlier fights when he was struggling against the flyweight division, the weight class, he was very, very clean until he started to get tired, and then you can see him quite clearly that he's tired. We've not seen that problem quite as much in recent fights. He's been far more, he's been better, more strict with his weight cutting and with his weight management, but also with his energy expenditure as well. His decision making in the fights has made a big difference since he started hitting the five rounders. But now, of course, he's up at bantamweight. This is really the weight class for him. I mean, you know, if you go back into Cejudo's career, his last two fights before he fought in the UFC were both. Well, one was a catchweight of 198, and then his flyweight debut, he missed weight to 128.5. So he's always been struggling at that bantamweight, that flyweight limit. And I feel like he was able to maintain enough discipline to get through what Chris Carriasso, Chico Camus, and Jussé Formiga, all incredibly tough fights. But then Demetrius Johnson in the first meeting at 197 was just too quick, too slick, beautiful clinch work, beautiful striking, you know. And then the Joe Benavidez fight was a very interesting one as well, where you could go back and watch it and you know, score it a different way, especially with the point deducted. If you look at this last streak of six fights, though, you know, Wilson Hayes, beautiful striking, really, really slick performance. Sergio Pettis, excellent management of range against a young, talented kid. That's where we saw his takedown defense, his takedown ability to control and secure when it hits the floor. And then, you know, what he did against Demetrius Johnson the second time around. Like, Cejudo, for me, has really proved himself to be not only one of the best mixed martial artists that we've seen in the UFC, but also to have a very high fight IQ and an indomitable spirit. Someone that's not going to quit. He's going to be determined to push through bad circumstances like that. The damage that he took to his lead leg in the DJ fight, you know, to be able to regroup and work through that, it takes an immense amount of mental fortitude. And I think that's something, of course, that Cejudo's going to have in this fight as an advantage as well. I think if he's able to get ahead on the scorecards and if he's able to put a stamp on the first couple of rounds, it's going to look like he's bullying Sterling at times. But the trap that you can fall into with Sterling is engaging too much and making yourself tired and then standing in his range when you're out of your own. Like, he did it to Munoz, he did it to Jimmy Rivera. Two really good examples of what he could do to Cejudo if he's able to keep him just on the end of that poke, 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 smash, poke, 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 kick, that kind of range. Cejudo. Side stands, karate style, punches to kicks, setting up his kicks. He's got good kicks on the break. He's got good kicks at the end of his punching combinations. And we know that Aljo does slip and dip his head off to the side. We remember what Moraes did to him. You know, there is an opportunity for Cejudo to slip him onto a kick or a knee. He's also got good knees in the clinch. We've seen really good knees in the clinch to the body several times. And then, of course, he's wrestling. How does he utilize that wrestling? You know, does he offensively force Aljo to deal with his wrestling, or does he use it defensively and try and capitalize? It's a fun fight. This one is. I'm interested because I feel like we've got one fighter in Henry Cejudo who's probably the better technical mixed martial artist in two of the three ranges, and the two ranges that he's better at are the two ranges that you have to go through to get to the third. But then Aljo's style is so chaotic and his conditioning so good over five rounds that he's able to push people to make them tired, to slow them down, and then, you know, solve problems with chaos, spinning elbows and you know, wild stuff like that, as well as, you know, taking people's backs before they've been taken to the floor. That's going to be a big key for Aljo. And he's got a nice little chain of submissions he can get off that as well. I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be a very, very interesting back and forth. And I could quite easily see these guys, you know, working their way into a trilogy, given the fact that they're going to be quite closely contested based on technical abilities and height and reach advantages. And yeah, very interesting. Enjoy this fight and make sure you check out Raid Shadow Legends. I'll see you next time.